Dublin's Talking Sport with Ken Doherty and Reggie Corrigan.
Sponsored by InsureMyVan.ie. Reduce your price, not your cover.
On Sunshine 106.8.
And this is the race now to the last fence. It's Arkell on the stand side for Ireland and Milhouse for England on the far side. Arkell going away now from Milhouse. This is the champion. This is the best.
Sunshine 106.8. Sunshine 106.8.
Hello and a very good morning to you. I'm Reggie Corrigan and welcome to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8 with thanks to InsureMyVan.ie. My apologies, we had some technical issues there with one of our microphones, but I'm glad to say we're all back up and running again now. Full packed show. Ken is on the line waiting to talk to me very shortly, all the way from Milton Keynes after a good week. We'll be talking about the tennis and, of course, the Euros starting last night in racing. A very, very good week last week for a lot of our listeners. Andrew Blair White getting three winners in the Lucky 15 and some very better off punters, let's put it, after that last week. So we'll be talking to him as well this morning. In rugby, we'll be talking to Paddy McAllister, who has recently announced his retirement from Connacht and rugby, and I'm looking forward to catching up with Paddy and hearing about his career. In GA, we'll be talking to Declan Drake, as always. He reviewing the Dublin hurling game last week against Clare, and also looking forward to Dublin Wexford match as well as the men's football game against Donegal in the league semi-final. And of course, Alan Cawley of Cawley's Call fame will look back at the League of Ireland fixtures and the Shamrock Rovers Finn Harps match in Talla Stadium last night, where thankfully 1,000 spectators were allowed back in after for the first time in 15 months. So we'll hear all that went. We're going to be talking golf with Deirdre Smith. So I'd love to hear from you. As always, you can get in touch with us on the show by texting us on 087 11 55 777 or WhatsApp us on 087 188 1068. And don't forget, we're on Facebook and Twitter. Now go to Ken. It's a little bit later than we had planned. Morning, Ken.
Very good morning to you, Reg.
Ah, good morning. We're having great fun here this morning, Ken.
I know. I tell you what, those ads, those people with those dads, they'd be very, very happy. We heard them about three times already.
Yeah, it was. There's no shortage of that. There'll be no more ads for the rest of the show. That's the way to look at it. How are you getting on?
There
will
be no more ads for the rest of the week. Never mind the rest of the show.
That's for sure. You keeping well?
Yeah, very, very well, thanks. Yeah, I must say, I enjoyed the opening of the Euros. I thought Italy were very impressive, weren't they? I mean, Turkey, you know, just played to try and defend and try and do what they can, maybe catch them on the break. But I thought Italy were extremely impressive, as you said. You know, it was really good. I think he's a great manager, that Mancini. You know, he's got a lot of good players there, play with a, you know, bit of pressure on them, playing in the Stadio Olimpico as well. Yeah. You know, with the old Nessa and Dorma at the beginning from Bocelli and the little ball coming out in the middle of the little toy car. What was that all about?
The car was the highlight of the show. That stole
sponsors.
The show.
Yeah.
I love that.
And yeah, it was great, wasn't it?
That was brilliant, yeah.
You had one of them, didn't you? You got one of those for Christmas a few years ago.
I'm getting another one now after seeing that. That was deadly. Absolutely brilliant. I think the best bit of marketing that you could ever... You know, there was loads of stuff going on with Twitter on it as well. Like, what was that all about? Yeah. What was the car all about? But it was the turn after your man took the ball out the way he turned around. I thought it was very funny on Twitter.
There was no three-point turn there, was there?
That's for sure, straight away. But I thought it was very funny on Twitter straight away. They had this picture of the guy putting the ball into the car, and they said Peter Crouch puts the ball into the car, the giant Peter Crouch in the tiny little car. So they were onto it straight away, everybody on Twitter taking the mick out of it. But it took a while for them to get going, but I think the Italians are a good side, there's no question about it. And I watched a great piece on the BBC. They did a bit about the build-up and everything else, and they were talking about how hard it had been for the Italian nation and people and not qualifying last time, and how they weren't happy about that and the changes that have happened. And Mancini seems to have really come in and turned them around. I think they're 26 games unbeaten.
Yeah, 28 and unbeaten now. 23 wins and 5 draws. Yeah. So, they're playing really good. And it's the first time they've actually scored 3 goals in quite a long time. I think maybe in 39 matches they've scored more than 2 goals in a game. So yeah, it's quite an impressive start for Italy. And they're sort of, even, you know, some of the commentators and some of the pundits are saying like they're sort of dark horses because they, you know, they're going to play their 3 games in that Stadio Olimpico, And they've got, as I said, they've got a very clever manager, a very experienced manager, a very successful manager. They got full of energy, you know, and, you know, they've got a great defence. And I'm that Chiellini, I mean, he's as old as you as I, you know, and he still plays at top level. Like, he just keeps going on. He's like a Duracell battery, that fella.
My little lad came into me, Aiden, last night, and he said to me, Dad, that guy played in the 88 Euros. I said, I don't think so, Aiden. He couldn't have gone back that far. He said, he did, Dad, he did. He's the oldest player. I said, well, that'd make him as old as me, so fair play to him if he did.
But he still, I mean, he made that block right at the end of the game.
Yeah, what
he,
you know,
and it was almost like he scored a goal, and the team were jumping around him, and that's great. That shows great camaraderie, you know.
Yeah,
and there's a lot of sort of togetherness there. So they could be dark horse. I mean, there's some great teams in the championship. We're really looking forward to you know, watching the rest of it. Now we're going to be watching it now for the next 4 weeks, and really looking forward to see how it's going to pan out. I was watching something on TV last night about the Euros, when England lost in the semi-final. They did a great program, sure, went around all the players, you know, sharing them semen, and spoke to them about their memories of when they almost won in Wembley. Do you remember that penalty shootout? They beat Spain in the quarterfinals and then lost. And it was Gareth Southgate, and it was the ultimate penalty for England that cost them, you know. But it was very, very good. Terry Venables was in there, Paul Ince. There was some great, great stories and great, and Gascoigne, of course. I mean, how he sort of, what sort of a player he was during that time. I mean, he was at his peak then, you know. And but for that penalty shootout, they and he should have scored in normal time. Well, sort of in for the golden goal, Gascoigne. He just missed the cross from Shearer and could have put him in England, and it would have been, maybe things might have been different for them all, but. Yeah, it was amazing. Great sort of insight into it, you know.
Absolutely. Well, I have Portugal as my guest team. They're the ones I want to to win, because I just love, I think they're a fabulous team. I love the place itself as well. So I just going to go with them. And I think, you know, when you talk about dark horses, they're 9-1. I think that at that price, they have a very good chance. So, but it is, as you say, going to be amazing.
I have a little sort of each way on them. I have a little each way. I spoke about the Ukraine, and when I was playing with, and I know you're going to play the interview with Ronnie Whelan and Steve McMahon pretty shortly, but Ronnie Whelan said, he says, I like Ukraine. You know, there were 130-1 on the exchanges, you know. So we both had a little each way on them as well.
But I
think France, Portugal, I like, And I'd like to see England do well, though. I mean, I don't know how you feel about them, but I'd like to see them play well. I think there's going to be a lot of pressure on them, but they'll have the home advantage, a bit like Italy in the Stadio Olimpico. They're going to have home advantage, and the final will be in Wembley should they get there. But I think they've got a young side, and it'll be interesting to see how they start off. I mean, they've got a tough opening against Croatia tomorrow, but I'm really looking forward to that one. I want to see how they play.
Excellent. Okay. Yeah, I'm looking forward. I know you got out with Ronnie and Steve McMahon during the week for a game of golf.
Yeah, it was absolutely fantastic. We played up, and I mean, I've been so lucky. I played some great course, but I went out with the two Liverpool greats, Ronnie Whelan and Steve McMahon. Myself and JP took them on, the snooker players against the footballers. And I know they dovetailed very well on the football field. I tell you what, they dovetailed even better on it. I gave Steve McMahon the nickname of the bunker bouncer, because he was bouncing bunkers left, right. I've never seen so many bunkers he bounced. He was hitting this low ball in, he bounced the bunker on a par 3, landed to about 20 feet, and then sunk the putt for a birdie. So from then on, he was called the bunker bouncer, but we had some great fun. They were telling some great stories, and two great lads as well. Ronnie, of course, is coming over to RT. He's going to be doing some of the matches and that. But what a legend! And it was a great insight just to have a little, like, 5 or 6 minutes chat with them about the Euros, about their time playing for England, and of course Ronnie playing for Ireland. And the contrast. Steve McMahon never liked playing for England, you know, because he didn't have the same camaraderie the way Ronnie had with his team under Jack.
Okay.
So have a listen to it. It's quite interesting, and we had a great L laugh, you know.
Okay, well, we're going to do.
Well,
that
we lost the
now.
Money. That's the that was the
you
that
lost the money. The 60-year-olds beat you. He tweeted about that. Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah,
so you'll have to get practicing. Well, I'm going to take the money off you when you get back as well. I'm playing well, so you're in trouble. You're in trouble. Keep earning over there. All right, Ken.
Yeah.
I'm going to play that clip now. We're going to listen to that, but you take care and we'll talk to you again soon.
Okay, great stuff. Thanks, Reg.
Take care. And that's our own Ken Doherty, of course. And he did talk to Steve McMahon, and he started off by asking Ronnie about Euro 88.
Great memories. Qualifying for the first major tournament, being part of all that. You know, you're lucky enough to be at your club level and you want to win things. And fortunately, I won a fair few big things at Liverpool. European Cup being one of them, but then you go to another level when you go to the internationals and you get into the Euros. And it was just a great squad of players, great manager in Jack, and just great to be involved with everyone.
And does it seem like so long ago now, or is it still like those memories of being with that team, you know, like Ray Houghton scoring the goal, and of course you scoring that wonderful goal against Russia as well?
We all have memories of it, obviously, but when you go back to Dublin, and I've been back a few times with Ray and Aldo, and people still talk about 1988. Yeah, yeah. It's that long ago.
But you're thinking,
but they all remember it because it was a huge thing in the country. Celtic Tiger was going on, everything was brilliant, and yeah, you still get the odd pint off someone. Not bad.
Yeah. Do you like Jack Charlton, the way you bring a check into the bar? none of the barmen catch it.
We were in Hill 16 once, and he had all the lads in, and he did the same thing. Jack paid by check, and I think it's still up there in Hill 16, the pub.
Steve, you were, I mean, you played in the European Championship as well. You played against Ireland, and you played against Ireland in the World Cup in 1990. What are your memories of the European Championships?
Not very good, to be honest. We had a nightmare. 88. We couldn't even get out of the group stage.
He didn't even get out of the hotel.
Well, that was the biggest thing. You know, I certainly wish I would have been in the Ireland camp, because not only did they enjoy going away with the country, they were quite successful given who they were and the size of the country. We weren't. We were shackled and we were in goldfish ball. And everything we did was scrutinised. And we couldn't move. So we were on
the high. Was that more from the media side? Yeah, the pressure of the media and the tabloids.
Very much so. Yeah. So what we couldn't enjoy being with England. And, and I will say, and go on record, I was so proud to play for my country, but I never really enjoyed the way I should have done.
The way
Ronnie did for Ireland and the way Aldo and Ray Owens and stuff. Because they used to come back and they used to love going away. I didn't like going away with England. And that's a fact. The English players then, we were great rivals, United players, Rob Owens and Stuart Pearce and Des Walkers, and they were all up there. And we were sick of beating them of a Saturday, the Everton players as well. And you're turning up, whoever you played on a Saturday, you're turning up for international duty on a Sunday. You spanked them on a Saturday, and you've got to say hello to them on a Sunday. You've got to be mates with them on a Sunday. And it was difficult because it was very clannish.
How about you though, Ronnie? I mean, you must have had some great times with Ireland. I mean, there wasn't a stranglehold against you, swear. There was no shackles on you. You were allowed to sort of almost do what you liked at times.
The good part about it was Jack as well.
He
was happy with us going for a pint, but don't go stupid. You know, don't make everything fall apart by just two or three getting too drunk that the press start getting hold of it. That's, I think, what was wrong with the England squad. Not that they went out drinking, but the press, if they got hold of anything, you were going to get slaughtered. We were never really going to get that slaughtered because we were in Leeson Street a lot of nights. But I think we were drinking with the frigging press newspaper fellas. So they couldn't really say an awful lot about us. But it was Jack treated us right, and he said, right, go and have a good time, but be ready for training. Don't be doing anything stupid. And we did everything stupid, to be fair, but not because everybody was just happy.
Yeah, but wasn't that sort of it kept a happy camp on you?
It
didn't affect your game, though, obviously.
It didn't, actually.
No.
We were, after we beat England in 88, we were up very late. You know, Jack was saying, get to bed, and go, we'll go in a minute, and then another sing song would start somewhere. But we enjoyed our times. You know, it's sad when you go to a major tournament and you can't go and have a couple of beers. You're stuck in the hotel.
It was the best singer.
It
was the best singer. Apart from you.
Probably me. Who could sing? God, I can't even remember who could sing.
Aldo?
No. Couldn't
terrible.
Sing a
note. No.
I've seen Paul McGrath recently on the, on Twitter or something singing a song. That wasn't Paul, I'm sure.
That was dope.
I can't remember him singing.
What about England this year? There's a lot of pressure on them. Second favourites behind France. Have they got a chance?
There's pressure every time you play for England. And every time expectations are so high and they don't produce.
Yeah.
And everyone's saying, oh, they got to now because they're all youngsters and they won't remember the pressure that they're all under many, many years ago. Yes, they will.
Yeah.
Once they have a bad game, they'll know about it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They have a bad 45 minutes, they might draw the first game and all of a sudden the pressure's on.
Yeah, yeah.
Expected to win, expectations are high, and it's a nightmare. And
they've got a good young squad of players.
Oh, they have?
Yeah.
No, I get that. Mm. And we had a good mixture.
Yeah.
And probably one of the best squads we had in 1990. Mm. And we got to the semi-finals. We should have got to the final. Yeah, that was a year that we should have.
Ronnie, Ireland not in it, of course, but have you seen sort of green shoots of like sort of positivity with Stephen Kenny and some of the results they've had?
I seem to be more positive than a lot of people at this moment in time. The lads come in and he's tried a new way, hasn't he? He wants them to play football. He wants everybody to get on the ball. We're watching. I go back to the likes of when we played Georgia, Luxembourg, these sort of teams. And they've all passed the ball better over as years went on. So Georgia are a hard team to beat now when it was usually 5 or 6 years ago. But Ireland need to get back to that. Great that they got a win, but it was against Andorra.
But it gives you an awful lot of confidence.
They go away to Hungary and they draw with Hungary, who have qualified.
Yeah.
So there's all little good bits happening and all these young lads have to mature. I still want him to stay playing the way he wants to play.
Yeah.
And the young lads will get more experience. They're going to make mistakes but you've got to put up with it and leave him do the job for another 2 years or whatever.
Who's your pick for the European Championship?
I will go France. I fancy France. Yeah. I know the favourites and we can all say, but I think the likes of Kante, Benzema coming back.
An outsider.
Ukraine, we all think that they've got good players when they turn up and when they're at it, are a good side. I don't think it's going to be one of their real outsiders like Sweden was.
Yeah, or Greece or something.
Or someone like that. Yeah, I don't think so. Yeah, I do fancy France as strong as anything. Mm. Belgium have got a fantastic squad. Germany always come good at big tournaments.
Yeah, yeah.
Italy always come good. Spain will be there or thereabouts with the talent they have. So.
We've just picked one, you've picked six.
Yeah, he's gone through the whole car.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
It's like a jockey. Giving you six horses,
exactly,
isn't it?
Yeah. And they never win. But that's why it's foolish to say England are second favourites, because they're not.
Tell me, what was the worst thing about playing with him and the best thing?
He's lazy. He's the laziest man in the world.
Are you talking about golf now or football?
As a roommate, and as I've known Ronnie for a long time, when I play for Everton.
Honestly, he's great.
Against Liverpool. Each other's game. One has to take a chance, one has to be defensive.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's you working it out yourself. Sometimes you just do it ad hoc.
Yeah, yeah,
it's
like
in golf. If 2 years are bad on the same hole, you're going to lose a hole. Mm. So it's pressure and making sure that your back's covered.
Well, I tell you what, myself and John Parra felt the pressure today because you were the best two dovetailers we've ever seen.
The bunker bouncer.
Steve McManaman, the best bunker bouncer in the world.
McManaman.
Oh, sorry, it's McMahon, sorry. I've had a shandy too many. Yeah, sorry. Steve McMahon, one of the best bouncer bunkers I've ever seen. Enjoy the Euros, lads. We wish you the best of health and the best of luck. Yeah.
Lovely.
Cheers, Ken.
Always a pleasure. Thanks for having us.
Excellent stuff there, Ken. Getting a bit tongue-tied talking to the legends, of course, that are Steve McMahon and Ronnie there. Brilliant stuff, and the golf going in favour of the two senior players taking the money off Ken and John Parrott. It sounds like it was a great day. The bunker bouncer, Steve McMahon, the bunker bouncer. Okay, keeping in line with the theme of football, I'm delighted now to be joined on the line by Dave Berber. Dave is the owner of DB. CBS Sports, and of course a big announcement that they are unleashing Ireland's first full-time football international academy. Good morning, Dave, how are you?
Morning, Reggie.
Yeah, you're very welcome to the show. So tell us about this. I mean, it's the first full-time international football academy, a chance for all young talented players to show what they're about, but also more importantly do it in the right way with education and placement and trips to the States as well.
Yeah, so I suppose for us in one way COVID was a disaster on the travel side, and then it's been a blessing, which has given us time to look at projects that we were trying to do and looking at doing over a number of years. So we've set up a full-time international academy. It's for two different markets. I'll talk briefly about the American market. I don't know how many of your fans will still be up listening to you. But basically, we're going to run a full-time program for American kids to come to Ireland, train full-time. We've partnered up with the American College Dublin, who are education providers. So the kids' college credits will be fully transferable back to their US colleges.
Excellent.
So alongside that is my own passion. And my mission, I suppose, is for both Irish girls and boys to have the best opportunity possible to reach their full potential in sport and education. So they'll come in alongside the American players. They'll be part of a full-time program. When the American kids go off for their education, the Irish kids will do SAT preparation. They'll do life skills about when traveling away, basic cooking, looking after themselves and preparing them for going away to a foreign country. So it's going to be held, which you're probably familiar with, Sports Ireland campus.
Yeah.
So we have the exact same facilities literally next door to the IRFU. So we have full access to the indoor soccer pitch, the indoor athletic tracks that the Olympians and the high-performance athletes will be using. We have the indoor futsal courts, the strength and conditioning rooms. We have access to the aquatic centre, the swimming pools, the hydro pools, the rehab baths. And then we have our own designated classroom and dressing room. So obviously the classroom for the education, sports science classes, video analysis classes. So we have a full team around us in terms of teachers. Head academy coach will be headed up by Colin Barron, who's just gone in as the academy director at Shelburne Football Club. Previously was at Dundalk, previously at Warren Point Seniors up in the Northern Irish Premier League. And he will head up a team of coaches with a sports science team. So that's basically the essence of what we're trying to deliver.
And what age group, David, are we talking about here that you'd be aiming towards?
Yeah, so I suppose we have to start somewhere. Ideally, the younger kids is what needs it most. But it's going to be for post-leaving cert. So kids that have just finished their applied leaving cert or their leaving cert, the Irish kids will be for them to, for us to get them the best possible scholarships and opportunities in the United States. Because personally, I don't feel, especially in football in this country, that we have that platform to give these kids an opportunity, be it in playing sport professionally or be it in the coaching. There's just not enough jobs around that sporting area to provide for these kids that want to pursue a career in football.
And so, would the target be that they would maybe get picked up by a team in the States maybe? Is there a showcase that can happen?
Yeah, so not a team as such. Mm-hmm. Obviously, if they're good enough through our contacts, through the MLS, absolutely, or the leagues below. But first and foremost will be education. So we'll be targeting the Division I colleges. We have a number of relationships we've built from going back to them forward to the States over the last 7 years. Big colleges like Penn State, Akron's. These are colleges that have, on the football side, 80,000-seater stadiums. The kids for the soccer, they fly to away games. They're just treated like royalty, Reggie. Treated like proper professional athletes.
And more, very importantly as well, they're getting a full education alongside it, Dave. So if things don't happen to work out, they have that to fall back on.
100%, Reggie. I think for me personally, there's a kid that's gone over recently, Aaron Malloy, who's I think he should be an idol to so many Irish kids. He was on a FOSS course here, went over to a smaller college, got drafted into a big college, Penn State, then got drafted into the MLS. Wasn't as successful in the MLS. He's dropped down a league or two, but he has a career for life now. He's made relationships, contacts. He could go into the coaching and earn six figures plus. You just can't get that in this country.
Excellent stuff. Okay, so give us some of your contact details. Where can people find more about this?
Yeah, so I suppose we're going to have an open day. So if you go to our website, which is dbsifa.com/open day, it's going to be held on Monday, the 5th of July. We'll have two sessions, unfortunately, due to COVID. Mm-hmm. Numbers are limited. So we'll do a tour of the facility. We'll show parents and players what we're going to provide. They'll meet the coaches, they'll meet the teachers, the sports science team, the physios. And that's on July 5th. So if they go to the website, it's just dbsifa.com/open day. And I just wanted to mention one more thing, Reggie.
Yep.
We are working with and speaking to already a number of companies where we're going to have a scholarship fund for players that can't afford to come on a program like this. So it will either be a partial scholarship or a full scholarship where possible. So we're speaking to a number of companies at the minute, especially companies that are global, that operate both in the US and the Irish market. So there'll be plenty of opportunities for everyone on this to have an appetite to play in the States and to further their career in football and education.
Excellent stuff. Well, it sounds fantastic, David. It sounds like a really good opportunity for those of who qualify for it and who can get up to the standards necessary. So well worth having a look at. Thanks for coming on and telling us about it. The very best of luck with it.
Cheers, Reggie. Thank you.
Take care. That's Dave Berber there of DBS Sports. And the website is dbsifa.com if you'd like to find out more information about those scholarships and the courses that they are running for Irish kids with a view to maybe going over to the States, furthering their education and both in football and, of course, academically, and seeing where they can go from there. Okay, we're going to take a quick break now, but when we come back, we'll be talking to Deirdre Smith and catching up about the golf. Don't go away. And you're welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport with thanks to insuremyvan.ie. You can text us on 087 11 55 777 or WhatsApp us on 087 188 1068. WhatsApp coming in. Lads, Reggie must have been on the outdoor dining last night. I wasn't, I assure you. It wasn't me. Some little glitches there at the beginning of the show. I do apologise to all our loyal listeners, but we have it sorted out now. I wish I was out in the outdoor dining last night. But it's time to turn our attention now to golf. I'm delighted to be joined by our regular contributor, Deirdre Smith. Good morning, Deirdre. How are you?
Morning, Reggie. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. Very well, and very happy to see how the golf is going. We're seeing some brilliant stuff going on. Really enjoyable. Seamus Power is going well, but Leona Maguire sitting up there in tied in second place on 6 under at the moment, and absolutely flying it in the LPGA.
Yeah, just marvellous to see her doing that. I think it might have been a little bit of a reaction to her not being in the US Open. You know, she feels she belongs at the very, very top of the stage, and just, you know, I think she just wanted to kind of prove a point that she should have been in the US Open. But what a first round! You know, she had 9 birdies to the 65 on the main tour is just a marvellous achievement. And then, you know, she had a wobble yesterday. She started with 3 bogeys. You know, that could easily have got away from her, but she turned in 1 over, which was fantastic. And then she traded birdies on 11 and 12 and birdies and bogeys on 11 and 12 and 15 and 16 to finish 1 over. So, you know, in a 4 round tournament, you're always going to have one round maybe that sometimes just doesn't go your way. But she, you know, to start with 3 bogeys yesterday, she could easily have let the mental gremlins get in there and, you know, and thought, oh, I don't really belong. And that was a bit of a flash in the pan yesterday. And, you know, you could have all those mental thoughts, but fair play to her. You know, she hasn't made all the records through her life to kind of start thinking negative. So it's great that she's still up there. She's tied second, which is fantastic.
Absolutely, it is tied second. And it is some going, as you said, with the little bit of a glitch at the beginning of it to get yourself back in there. And Kang is up there leading on 7 under, and Kim is tied with Leona as well. And I suppose, you know, you wouldn't be human if you weren't kind of looking over your shoulder and seeing the results and how Stephanie Meadows is doing as well. And there's that little bit of driving each other on. So as you said, she wanted to prove a point and doing it so well.
Yeah, sure. I mean, look, Stephanie's unfortunately has had a poor performance in this tournament. Yeah. You know, she's missed the cut. Possibly putting a little bit too much pressure on herself. That's my feeling on it. You know, I could be completely wrong. Probably seeing Leona coming and feeling, you know, I was out here first and I deserve to be. And, you know, so she'll work that out herself. She'll know what's happening and she'll work out, you know, what's happening, whether it's a mental issue or a technical issue. And I've no doubt that Stephanie will come back stronger, but definitely going in the wrong direction or went in the wrong direction in this tournament. But look, there's a long way to go. I don't want to get ahead of ourselves.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a matter of if Leona will win. I think it's a matter of when, but we just have to take the pressure off. And she was so unlucky in the match play. She was the only person to beat Ali Ewing, who won the tournament. And, you know, it's a quality field she's in. There's 40 players within 6 shots. She's certainly not home and hosed yet, but hopefully she can hang on in there. And I mean, if she wins, it'll be a massive. But if it's top five again, it's still massive. So, and she's, you know, it has always been incremental with Leona.
Okay, well,
improvements. So, yeah. So she'll do the right things. That's for sure.
Okay, yeah, sorry, just lost you there for a second. That's great. No doubt we'll keep an eye on how she's going, and I really hope that she can continue that standard and that level the whole way through it. On to the men's, and I mentioned Seamus Power, of course. He's riding pretty high himself at the moment in the Palmetto Championship of Congaree. It tied fourth on 6 under. And Seamus has been somebody who's kind of ticking away, grinding, I'd almost use the word, on the circuit, and making a name for himself, but pushing very high up. You know, when you look up along the table and you see Dustin Johnson sitting in second position, and he's only 3 shots ahead of Seamus, it's kind of feels like it's only a matter of time before he can really get the job done.
Yeah, look, you know, he's one of those guys probably that doesn't get the credit he deserves. You know, we're always looking at Shane and Rory and Porrick to an extent, and sort of lauding them and praising them, and you know, Seamus doesn't get the credit he deserves, and you know, he's tied fourth. He's made 8 cuts this year. He's had 1 top 10, and again, I think you're right. I think it is only a matter of time, and you know, why not this week? And that you know, it's a quality field too. I mean, obviously, it doesn't have the feel of a US Open or any of the majors or a major tournament. But you know, if he got a win in the PGA, his life would turn around. I mean, he's made practically $300,000 this year. So you know, he just doesn't get the he deserves. And God, we'd love to see him do it. And at 22-1, you know, he's worth an each way bet. I heard you talking to Ken this morning about putting on an each way bet on a 9-1. So I think, yeah, Seamus Power at 22-1 is a good bet today.
Absolutely, there's no question about it. And then of course the US Open is at Torrey Pines. Who are your fancies for that as we look forward to it?
Look, Dustin Johnson at the moment is you know, playing fantastic golf. He's, as you say, he's right up on the top of the leaderboard there. You know, you'd have to say that he's in poor position. John Rahm, look, if John Rahm won it, nobody would be given out, or nobody would take away from him because of begrudging him. That's it. Sorry. Thanks. Yeah. You know, COVID, because of what happened to him in the previous tournament. So, look, he won at Torrey Pines before John Rahm. Now the US Open is going to be in the, it was his first PGA victory. But the US Open is going to be a much tougher setup. But look, when you go back to a course and you have good memories and you've won on it, you know, it's amazing how that sort of has an effect on your performance. He grew up on playing on those the Poana greens, and the greens in Torrey Pines are you know, it's Poana grass. So I think that John Rahm has to be installed as probably the favourite. He is the second best scoring average of any player on that course, other than Tiger Woods. And you know, he feels he is the game to win the US Open. So you'd have to have John Rahm up there, right up there as well. The last time that it was played in Torrey Pines, Tiger and Rocco Mediate were level, and there was a playoff. They were the only two players under par. So it's going to be like all US Opens. It's going to be a real test of your character and your game. Tight fairways, bouncy greens. You know, Rahm is 11-1. DJ and Spieth and Koepka are 14-1. Rory's 18-1. You know, Lowry's going in the right direction, has had a couple of great performances recently, great signs in his game. So, you know, like every week, it's wide open. There's so many players who can win it. Just like in the LPGA, you know, there's 40 players in that tournament now at Leona who are within 6 shots. Yeah. So there's just so many good players. And then Phil Mickelson, you know, we'd that would be the real fairy tale if he completed the Grand Slam.
Well,
you know, but he says it's not a good place for him. He finds it's not a good place for him. But you know, we'll see.
Time will tell, Deirdre, and time will tell, and be well.
Time will tell.
Anyway, and hopefully, as you said, we'll get the job done. I'm going to have to let you go there. We're running out of time again, but I'll catch up with you again next week, and hopefully, we'll have good news to report on Leona's result. Take care of yourself.
Yeah, hopefully.
Take care.
Reggie. Cheers. Thanks.
Bye-bye. Deirdre Smith there, of course, our regular golf contributors. Time to turn our attention to one of the most eagerly parts of the show after last week's performance. It is the horse racing section and Andrew Blair White. Morning, Andrew. How are you?
Yeah, I'm very good, Reggie. How are you?
I'd say you are very good. The social media lines were lighting up here last week. Three winners in our lucky 15. All sorts of reports from people coming back with, a 50 cent lucky 15 returning 200 odd quid, and the same with the 1 euro bringing back 400 quid. So there was great results for a lot of our listeners last week. Well done. You're very popular.
Yeah, thank you very much. Look, it was a good week to get three big winners in as well, 9-1, 11-1, and 12-1. And
yeah,
it's a delight to see, I suppose, some of the listeners getting on and getting a nice little payout on a Saturday. It was a tough enough day's racing. It's been a tough enough few weeks as well. So it's been it was nice to get a big win on the board, and certainly, I'm very glad that people were able to get on and put a bit of trust in backing them.
Okay, so what was the main news this week? What's been happening?
Yeah, well, I suppose going back to last Saturday, it was the Derby, and Adair won the Derby for Charlie Appleby and Adam Kirby, and it was a bit of a surprise, really. He was quite well backed on the day, but he was a big price. He was as big as 40-1 when we were talking last Saturday morning. He went off 16-1 in the end, but won very impressively. Aidan O'Brien's horse, Bolshoi Ballet, who was obviously such a hot favourite for the race, didn't perform whatsoever. He was found to be lame on the hind leg. He got a bad cut. He was struck into early on in the race, which wouldn't have helped his cause whatsoever. So he's probably one to still keep the right side of, even though he disappointed last week. A couple of the other runners, the two I liked, ran perfectly respectable races. Hurricane Lane came third and McSwinney came fourth, and both of them ran honest races, but they were no match for the winner. But it's yet again another year where the Derby winner's gone to an outsider, Reggie, and I suppose it would be interesting to see how Adair goes now, stepping up into probably better company against the older horses later in the season. But it didn't look a vintage renewal on paper, so potentially one to take on, and I'd suspect the older horses may well have his number later on in the year when they clash.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, there's loads of racing on this weekend. It's absolutely jam-packed. What have you gone to? Where have you decided to focus on this week?
Yeah, well, there's heaps of meetings on. Looking forward, I suppose, there isn't massive amount of quality on today because of Royal Ascot next week, which is a brilliant 5 days and should be fantastic. But looking at York today, they've a big race, the Grand Cup. I think it's a four-runner race, but it's a small but select field. And I quite like, actually, the mare in this, McAwee, for David O'Mara and Jim Crowley. I think she could take a lot of beating. She doesn't win that many times, but at the same time, she likes these small field events. She gets a bit of a weight allowance from her big market rivals as well. It looks a tight race, as I said, but Roberto Escobar has to give her a few pounds at the top of the weights as well. So I think she should go close. She's around the 5-2 mark. And then there's a few competitive races at Sandown as well. The Scurry Stakes, which is over 5 furlongs, usually an extremely fast race. Mick O'Callaghan over in Ireland brings over Steel Bull to that race, who's around 13-2. Lee Roach takes the ride. This horse won at Goodwood last year as a 2-year-old. Has been a little bit disappointing since, but I think maybe going back over to England on a bit of better ground might seem to good effect. And I think at that sort of price, you could probably back them each way. And then the 325, the Coral Handicap, really competitive 9 furlong handicap. I quite like a progressive colt, a horse called Escobedo for Richard Hannon and Thor Hammer Hansen, who's, I think, in there at around the 7-8-1 mark, was narrowly touched off last time at Windsor on reappearance, when actually the jockey dropped his whip with a furlong to go, which wouldn't have suited. He only got raised a pound for that effort off 73. I think he could go well. But there's plenty of competitive racing, and certainly looking forward to my lucky 15. There'd be plenty of options because it's competitive and real value out there for people if they want to go find it.
Okay, well, let's have a look at that lucky 15 as we're getting a bit tight on time.
Yep. I'll go through it quickly then. The 2.55 at Hexham is where I go first. A competitive handicap hurdle over 2.5 miles. And Nicky Richards saddles a lovely grey horse in this Glinger Flame to one mark. The 305 at York, the Grand Cup that I just mentioned there, and McAwee for David O'Mara and Jim Crowley at 5-2. The 340 at York, the race afterwards, a really competitive 6 furlong handicap, good prize money as well. Jer Lyons brings over Akido, who's in there at 8-1. Sam Ewing takes the ride. He takes off £5 as well. Jer Lyons usually wouldn't get his horses to travel over to England for the good of their health. So I think that could be a really interesting one at 8-1. Would be one of my stronger ones of the day. And the 425 at Downpatrick, going back to a bit of jumps racing, 2.5, 2.7 miles, sorry, handicap chase. And I like the mare in this, Emer, for Matthew Smith. She's around 5-1. She was really progressive last year, won a couple of races. Matthew Smith's a very shrewd handler with the horses he has. And she probably would have needed her reappearance run at Kilbeggan a few weeks ago. She travelled well into the race before fading late on. I think she'll strip fitter for that. And at 5-1, I like the look of her as well.
Excellent stuff. Well, there'll be lots of people hanging on your every word. You do have a Royal Ascot Lucky 15, which I'm going to give out now in a second. We'll put up on our social media channels as well. But once again, Andrew, congrats on last week. There'll be a lot more people taking heed this week, I think, after your performance, and certainly having a little punt. But we'll catch up with you again next week when we have more time.
Thanks very much, Reggie. See you next week.
That's Andrew Blair White there giving us his Lucky 15. So for today's Lucky 15, the 255 in Hexham Ginger Glinger Flame, the 305 in York McAwee, the 340 in York Akido, and the 425 in Downpatrick is Emer. And very quickly, the Royal Ascot Lucky 15, of course, on Tuesday, MC Muldoon, which would be a 71 shot. On Wednesday, Parents' Prayer. And again, and that's in the 340, and then in the 420 on Wednesday at AAB, that'd be an 8-1 shot, and then in the 305 on Thursday, Sir Lamorock. But we will get all of those up onto our social media channels and Facebook pages and everything else, so that you can track those down. Okay, we still have loads to come in the show. Just after the news at 10, I'm going to be talking to now retired Connacht rugby player Paddy McAllister. We're also going to be talking to Declan Drake about all of the GAA news. And Alan Cawley will reflect on the opening game last night in the Euros. Don't go away. And you're very welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport with me, Reggie Corrigan. With thanks to InsureMyVan.ie, we're here every Saturday from 9 to 11 with all of your sporting news. And we would love to hear from you on 087 11 55 777. Or you can WhatsApp us on 087 188 1068. Now, time to turn our attention to rugby. And I'm delighted to be joined on the line by Paddy McAllister. Paddy announced during the week, to the surprise of quite a few people, that he was stepping down and retiring from the game after 14 wonderful seasons. And as I said, delighted to be joined on the line by Paddy. Good morning, Paddy. How are you?
Good morning, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no, great to have you. Great to have you. And first and foremost, congratulations on your career. You've had a wonderful career that's seen you play for Connacht, Gloucester, Aurillac, Ulster along the way. And of course, Ballinahinch. We can't forget that. Wonderful club either. So you've decided to step down and give it a rest. Quite young for a prop. I tried to drag it out as long as I could, but you've decided to retire somewhat early.
Yeah. Listen, I think it came to a bit of a surprise for some people, but as you said, it's been quite a few years. I've been lucky to play for some really good clubs, and starting it all off with Ballinahinch when I was just out of high school. But, you know I've only been in the game for a short period of time, but I feel like from when I first started, the game's massively changed to when it is now. I woke up this morning and saw a clip of Ryan Baird running rings around people last night, scoring a try. And back when I first started playing, you had one big second row who didn't talk and one who had a bit more brain cells who called the lineouts. Not second rows who can do what they can do now. So I just feel it's, you know, family. There's some family reasons in there as well, and I've enjoyed it, and I can walk out of the games that have been carried out at this stage.
Yeah, well, that's always it's always good. I was lucky enough myself to retire on my own terms as well. It's wonderful when you can do that instead of being forced out either through loss of contract or injury. So I can understand where you're coming from. You made some interesting points there about the game changing. Do you feel, is it getting away from some people? I'm not saying you, but like, is it a game that is now very much just geared towards a certain type of elite athlete?
All I can do is kind of compare it from, you know, from when I was, say, in the academy coming through to what I see young kids doing now. It's definitely physically changed. The intensity of matches, whether it be tempo or physicality, the size of some of these young kids coming through. And the rules are definitely changed. You know, when I had my first few scrums playing for Ulster, it was crouch, touch, you know, engage, which caused a lot of pain neck. But now the rules have changed as well, and I guess in the sense of the whole game, it's more of a business now as well than it was really back then, which is understandable. You know, things have to change as the world changes, so it's definitely a completely different game to play in and sport to be involved in from when I started, but it's still, you know, it's still the best thing I've done in my life to date.
And would you, following on from that then, support for the players within the game? I mean, obviously the pressures are higher as the game becomes more and more professional, and the need to win and perform becomes so much higher. Do you feel there's enough support there for the players within it? Do they have good setups?
Yeah, I mean, it is a cutthroat results-based business, which should be, I guess. When I first started, there was still that kind of not amateur head on it, but there was still a few guys hanging around which had that kind of sense of what rugby was around. So it is a lot more cutthroat in terms of support for the players. I mean, as I said, rugby has become more of a business than anything now, and if it is available to you, but it's very much on the player to go and resource and go and get it. We're lucky here. I've been in a few leagues where the RPI are heavily involved in, not just by the phone, but, you know, we have a wonderful lady, Deirdre Lyons, who is a face. You know, she's at the club multiple times a week. And she's very, you know, she's there whenever you need her, for the smallest to the largest thing. And there's a lot of times they're trained now where they can kind of see when they might need to step in and have a chat with you. So that's definitely, the support system is there. I think you've got to man up sometimes and put your pride away if you do need help in any aspect of life, whether it's, you know, something serious or something small. It is there for you, and there are avenues for it. You've just got to take a bit of ownership to go and get it.
I read a wonderful piece, Paddy, on your past, you know, before I was getting ready for the chat with you this morning. And you're unique in so many ways, in that you grew up in the Congo and then came over when you were about 14 to go to school in the Royal School in Armagh. And that's kind of where you got introduced to rugby. So, you know, your upbringing and your background is very, very different to what a lot of the people maybe that you were rubbing shoulders within the professional rugby circuit would have, you know, experienced along the way. You tell a great story about playing with baby crocodiles when you were a young kid and still having the scars to bear with it. Tell us a little bit about that and what life was like growing up in the Congo.
Yeah, I think for any young boy, it was a childhood of dreams, really. It all started with my grandparents after World War II went out to Congo in 1950, and you know, my father was born and raised out there. He met my mother in France in Bible college later on, and then moved out quickly thereafter back to the Congo. And, you know, when your backyard is a jungle with, you know, whatever animal you can find, you can play with, it's a bit of a dream world. And I had a great time. I'm very blessed and privileged, I feel, to have that upbringing, because it's definitely helped me when I'm maturing as an adult to have a different kind of aspect and perspective on life. I've seen what real life can be like, rather than, you know, you forgot to turn the hot water on in your house and you might have a cold shower type thing. So I appreciate what life is, and yeah, it was different. I have two older brothers who played rugby in Africa who are a bit older than me, and I had no interest. I was a football soccer guy and loved that. Brought my soccer ball down to watch them play rugby, and it wasn't until I went to the Royal School Armagh where kind of you had to play rugby. And I guess I was a bit hardened from whether it be the crocodiles or getting beaten up by my two older brothers, that I enjoyed the physical aspect of what the sport brought. So I took to it very quick, and I had wonderful help from Neil Doak, who was the Ulster Academy at that stage, and kind of invited me into the academy, and I didn't even know what it was. And at 16, and he came down and trained me in my school, you know, two or three times a week, all the way from Belfast, while my friends were having, you know, crisps at lunch. I was out being sick on the pitch for some reason, and I stuck with it.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you from my own experience, I find that being once you kind of get over the 115 to 120 kilo mark, it's hard to turn on a soccer pitch. So you might have made the right decision in your choice of career.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I was getting further back. I was getting put back in the goalkeeper every time. I didn't like it.
We take up a lot of space in the goals. It's usually a good place to put us. I know Doki well. He's a wonderful guy. He's done some brilliant work with the academy up there over the years, and obviously moved on to bigger and better things as well as time progressed. You've been very open as well, Paddy, about you know, some challenges you've had to go through with your own family. Unfortunately, your wife was ill on was it your second child?
No, our third. You know, as I've said, you know, I'm quite open about things like that in life. And it was August last year, so in the height of the pandemic, and she was 36 weeks pregnant, and you know, on a bright sunny Thursday afternoon, she just came back in the house, and I could tell that something was just a bit strange. She was still there, but she wasn't speaking. And we have lovely neighbors around here, and Gavin Duffy, who I'm sure you're friendly with, lives right beside us. And I just wanted to make sure I knew something was up. I just wanted to make sure by someone else's reaction that, you know, it was serious. I told the girls to come in and just, you know, I said, something's wrong with Deborah, if you just have a look. And as soon as I saw their faces, I just rang the ambulance straight away. And she had a severe stroke, and it was scary. It was something which just comes out of the blue. And you know, it was during the pandemic, so I couldn't go to her hospital. And then I just put the other two kids to sleep, and I get a phone call from the hospital saying, you know, this is very serious. It's about 60% chance that your wife and your child would make it, would not make it. And if you can't get to the hospital in 10 minutes to make a decision on two options, we'll make it for you, because she needs to go to Beaumont now. So I quickly, as we've got good neighbors, quickly just ran there. And I don't think I said much. They just understood that they had to look after the kids. And I managed to get there in time. And it was a tricky weekend. But the amount of support, you know, from the moment it happened, people all over the world staying up, you know, all night praying, and the support I had from the club, and was amazing. And, you know, it's definitely a miracle that both are doing well and alive. So it's something I'm grateful for.
Absolutely. Well, you know, a story like that, it puts everything into perspective. You know, players are often in sport, we're worrying about the next contract or the next this or that or where it's going to go. And you've moved around different clubs, and I know how difficult it is sometimes to secure contracts. But, you know, this puts it all into perspective when you get a shocking piece of news like that. And thank God everything turned out well in the end. Would that have been maybe an influence in your decision to maybe wrap up slightly earlier as well?
Yeah, it definitely was. I'm not gonna lie about it. I still know I can perform as a professional for a number of years. But you know, as my wife is still healthy and thriving, she still has to go through a few procedures this year. And you know, she's been, as you know yourself, they go through probably worse than we do in rugby. They wear the scars that we do, and don't really have a way to vent it out the next day in training or anything like that. So. And we had been away from our family and friends in the north around Belfast for over 7 years now. And it was a simple answer. We asked each other, would our family life be better close to friends and family or wouldn't be? And when we decided it probably would be, well, it just, you know, as a man, I just automatically said to myself, right, well, my family comes first now. I've come first for a long time. And after what's happened, my family's going to come first now. And, you know, we're excited. There's genuine peace when you make a decision like that, when you put your family first. There's zero regret.
Yeah.
And I'm happy, and I'm actually proud as a man to accept it that easily.
Well done on that, and I wish them, all of your family, best and in recovery from that. Moving on from that, of course.
Thank you.
you know, rugby will still be a big part of your life, no doubt, as it is mine. You watch it, you talk about it, and you keep an interest. It's something that'll always be there. And with that in mind, I know you didn't really get the chance because of COVID to make the impression that you would have liked in Connacht. But speaking of Connacht, from what you've seen down there, and I know there's a couple of players that have been lost this year that, you know, will be a blow to the club, but from a future point of view and them moving forward, I see great things being done on the ground down there, but I often feel that budget-wise, they just don't get the support that they really need. How do you see the future for Connacht going?
Yeah, you know, I guess now this is kind of my first interview where I'm not really
tied
a professional contract, yeah. So I can kind of speak my mind a little bit with respect. I do feel Connacht are in a place where it's an unbelievably young, talented squad, hungry men who all have the same kind of mentality. And there's no one who stands out in a playing department, which you would have in probably majority of clubs, who might be a bad apple for the squad. There's nothing like that there. And I'd be honest and say, if there would be some issues like that, they've got a coaching and a medical and a strength and conditioning setup where, as well, the same thing you might have, which I've experienced in other clubs. You can tell there's tension between them, you know, whether it's not public tension, you can just tell. There's nothing like that here. I do feel like they're under budgeted by the IRFU, in my opinion. You know, even before my time here, I think the people of Connacht came together to save the province down in Dublin. And I think they're, you know, when I was playing for Ulster to qualify for Heineken Cup, all our mentality was if you were above Connacht in the league, you qualified. It was the three top, you know, seeded Irish clubs. And I guess there might still be that kind of mentality where Connacht is just the fourth province. But you can see in the results from this year, I mean, beating Leinster back-to-back, you know, we've beaten every province kind of away from home. They're a hungry squad. Yeah, there'll be a few holes and shoes to fill, especially with Quinn Roo probably leaving, who's been a man who commands respect both by players and coaches, who's going to be tough to replace. But I think if they just get some consistency within keeping the senior players there, I think they'll have a massive chance and kind of pushing real strides forwards in the next couple of years.
Yeah, let's hope so, because they're I have a very, very soft spot for Connacht. My mother's from Galway, so I'm they're my second team, I'll put it to you that way. But I do feel like you, that they don't get the funding that they deserve, and that they could get a lot more. They have to work for every single rugby ball for training, basically, down there. That's the way I feel it. And then, you know, your other team, you mentioned going back to Belfast, your other team you're associated for a longer period of time, of course, was Ulster. And you will have, keen interest on how they're doing. I'm just interested to finally get your thoughts on that team as well and that squad. I mean, I know there's great things being done by Dan and the other coaching staff up there, but, you know, Stephen Ferris, and who I'd know well, would be of the opinion and is quite publicly quoted as saying that he feels they're underachievers, and for many years Ulster have been, and, you know, they're kind of the also-rans, but they never really get there. And with the squad of players that they have and the fantastic fan base that they have, they really should be doing better than they are. What's your thoughts on how Ulster are performing?
Yeah, I mean, I can kind of see Stevie's point. I mean, when I was playing for Ulster, we reached three finals. You know, one was a Heineken Cup and two league, and we had a team where it was probably 95% Ulster born and bred, where you had your marquee players, who the likes of Ruan Pienaar, Johan Muller, Pedri Wannenberg, John Afoa, who are real stars of world rugby, let alone just their own country. And we lost every final. So I can see his point there. But, you know, finals rugby's tough. I've been lucky. When I was at Gloucester, I was in two more European finals and lost those two. So it's tough to win these finals. And I wouldn't hang my coat on just being the nearly men. I guess every kind of player's career is judged at the end of the day on kind of trophies in the cabinet. So they have a massive fan base. I mean, I remember playing for Ulster and even seeing now stuff on TV where, whether you're playing Zebre or Toulouse, it's going to be a packed out stadium, you know, 15,000, 16,000 people there. It's massively supported club. It's got the best kind of facilities and resources that you need to in the professional environment. So they've got everything put in place. I think Dan McFarland's done a great job. If they can keep him for as long as they can and then just get a bit of stability and add sprinkle that stardust of players, whether they're marquees or homegrown, you know, the ceiling, you know, it's never ending ceiling there when you have all those ingredients for any club. Yeah. So it's kind of, time will tell, but I can see Stevie's point.
Yeah, okay. Well, Paddy, it's been absolutely wonderful talking to you. I really enjoyed that chat, and thank you for being so open and honest about everything that's gone on. I'd like to wish you the very best for the future, you and the rest of your family, and your move back to Belfast, I've no doubt, will be highly successful in whatever your career takes you next. So the best of luck, and thanks for talking to us.
I appreciate it, Reggie. Thank you very much.
No worries. That's Paddy McAllister. Thanks. There. Connacht rugby player, Ulster rugby player as well, of course. You know, I'm always struck when I talk to people like that on air about you kind of worry about silly things, and you know, he thankfully came through something that could have been very tragic in the recent past, and his wife recovered well from that, and his young family are thriving again, so that's good to hear. And as he said himself, he's standing up and making a decision for what's right and best for his family, so fair play to him and the very best of luck to the future for Paddy. We're going to take a quick break now. When we return, we're going to be talking to Declan Drake about all things GAA. Don't go away. And you're welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport. With thanks to InsureMyVan.ie, we're here every Saturday from 9 to 11 with all your sporting news. Still to come on the show, we're talking Declan Drake GAA in a couple of moments, and Alan Cawley will be talking football to us as well. Your text messages coming in, not surprisingly, a few of you looking for that lucky 15 again after the wonderful success last week that Andrew Blair White had with 3 out of 4 winners. Okay, so today's lucky 15 is the 255 in Hexham, Ginger Flame a 15-2 shot, the 305 in York, Makawee 9-4, 340 in York, Aikido at 15-2, and the 425 in Downpatrick is Emer. And we will put all of those up on our social media channels, Twitter, all that kind of stuff, so you can catch up on it as well. Okay, joined on the line now by Declan Drake. Morning, Declan, how are you?
Very good, Reg, and yourself?
Oh, very good indeed, I have to say. What a weekend we have in store. Weather's supposed to be wonderful. Loads of great GA going on as well. And last week was pretty impressive as well. The Hurlers winning over Clare?
No, they actually lost to Clare.
Sorry, I beg your pardon.
Would have liked to have beaten Clare. Yeah, that would have been sweet. No, they actually lost to them by, it was five points in the end. 34 points to 2 goals and 23 at Parnell Park. And in their final home game of the division campaign, their final game, of course, is this afternoon against Wexford at 3 o'clock.
Yeah, and you got a chance to catch up with Matty Kenny to talk about that afterwards. Let's have a listen to that.
I felt as the game was going on that we were giving away too many frees, and you know, Bunny Kelly was scoring from all sides. So something we've got to look at. Clare played really well tonight, but Orlais played really well also. And I thought, just you know, some of the frees were maybe of a bit softish nature. But look at, you know, it's something we've got to look at, that you know, that we're a little bit more disciplined. But I thought tonight's game, I thought the intensity of tonight's game has stepped up, and since the break a few weeks ago. So you can see now we're getting close to the championship, and I think, you know, both sides really went at it, and I think that'll do both of us and ourselves a lot of good.
Yeah, well, we did say, Declan, before that was going to be an incredibly tough challenge for them, and proven to be so in the end. It won't be any easier tonight against Wexford.
No, certainly won't. You know, the impressive thing about them, Reg, over the last couple of games has been the consistency of their scoring rate. They scored 30 points a few weeks back against Laois down in Lamore Park. They were only a point short of that against Antrim, scoring 126 and winning the game in Parnell Park. They scored 29 points again last Saturday, 2 goals and 23, but they actually lost to Clare. And the big difference between the two teams last week was the free-taking of Tony Kelly. Matty mentioned it there in the little piece. You know, you have to be disciplined in the tackle now in the modern game of hurling with such sharp shooters like Kelly. We're very fortunate with Donald Burke on our team. Then you have the likes of Joe Cooney and Pat Horgan from Cork as well. They'll punish you every opportunity they get. Kelly got 20 points last week and 17 were from frees. But we showed some impressive passages of play, and we'll go down to Wexford. with a certain degree of confidence this afternoon. They'll be smarting after the result up in Antrim last week and having Davy Fitz sent to the stand as well. And of course, for both teams, Reg, it's the final outing before the serious business of Championship starts in 2 weeks' time. We're, of course, playing at Antrim in the first round this year.
Yeah, indeed. And Antrim have become, you know, somewhat of a force as well. We've seen how much they've progressed, so that's not going to be an easy one either.
No, it's absolutely fantastic to see the strength back in Antrim hurling again. You know, I was in the doldrums there for a few years, but a lot of people have been doing a lot of very good work up in the Glens, and they're getting the results. They had the victory over Clare, the draw against Wexford last week as well. They played us, of course, a few weeks back down in Parnell Park, so they know exactly what we're about. We know what they're about. So, but look, the White Heat of Championship battle on a Saturday night in Navan, which is a strange place for us to go and play a Championship hurling game, will be interesting. And but today is one final opportunity just to maybe slot some final pieces into the jigsaw ahead of that game for Matty.
Absolutely. Well, let's hope that they can do that and continue to make progress. Okay, turn our attention to the football now. It's an unbelievably juicy Saturday. Of course, Kerry taking on Tyrone in Fitzgerald Stadium at 5 o'clock. First up, this should be an absolute cracker as well. Of course, for most people, Kerry will be the favourites, but Tyrone are tough enough outfit at the moment as well.
Yeah, Kerry will be the favourites, I suppose, particularly with home advantage, Reg. And we discussed this recently on the programme as well, the merits and the fairness of that, you know, why they couldn't, like Dublin and Donegal, have agreed a neutral venue for their semi-final meeting. But we have, they're playing each other now. If Kerry win, of course, this afternoon, there'll be no league final this year. We spoke about that last week as well. So basically, for those teams, it's a glorified dress rehearsal for championship. All change, of course, in Tyrone this year in the management and structure and that, so they'll be very determined to put their own stamp on things this year, and a good performance against Kerry down in Killarney this evening would be somewhere stepping stone for that.
Yeah, absolutely. Of course, the footballers as well. We've got the good one to look forward to at 7:15 in Breffni Park as well against Donegal. Again, you know, Dublin will be favourites going into it, there's no question about it, but that's going to be a tough one as well for them.
Yeah, it's a welcome challenge. Just a few weeks ahead of the championship again. You know, we've had a fairly good Division 1 South League campaign. We went through it unbeaten. We had victories over Roscommon the first day and Galway, and sandwiched in between was the draw against Kerry down in Semple Stadium in Thurles, which was perhaps for certain periods of the game their least impressive performance of the year. But no, Mick Galvin has done great work in Desi Farrell's official absence from the team over the last number of weeks, and it'd be nice to win this evening's game and hopefully, you know, get a league final out of it as well. That would be nice to get an extra game out of it. So we wish Mick and the boys all the best on the way up to Breffni Park for that one, which, as you say, throws in at 7:15 this evening.
Yeah, no, it'll be one that everyone will be glued to, no doubt about it. The ladies as well, they've got the semi-final against Mayo, is that right?
That's right, yeah, they're out in action this evening down in the LIT Gaelic grounds in Limerick, a 5:15 start for that. Again, they had a 100% record in the group, Reg, defeating Waterford, Cork in Páirc Uí Chaoimh and Tipperary most recently at Semple Stadium in Thurles last week as well. So Mick Bowen has made one change to the starting 15 for that game, Lindsay Davey in for Lucy Collins. And for all the All-Ireland success Dublin have had over the last number of years, and indeed reaching every final since 2014, they've won the league only once. That was in 2018, did the double course that year. So a June 26th Croke Park final in front of supporters awaits the winners of this evening's game. So it'll be that's an extra incentive as well. Cork or Donegal await in the final.
Okay, very good. Cork or Donegal in the final, doesn't get any easier, although they'll feel a little bit better having taken care of Cork already. What else have we got to wrap it up?
Yeah, just briefly, the two Camogie teams are out in action this afternoon. The senior Camogie team are taking on Clare in a Division 1 relegation playoff in Burr. That's at 5 o'clock. The Inter's Division 2 relegation semi-final is taking place against Laois. That's in Clane at 2:30. You have to wish Dara Cook from our own club, Crumlin, all the best in goal for Dublin there this afternoon. And there's a bit of news during the week, Reg, too. Go Ahead Ireland announced a 3-year sponsorship of all Dublin Club League and Senior Championships for the next 3 years. And Dublin is a county, of course, that has the same sponsor across all 4 inter-county teams. And that same principle is now going to apply for league and club championships in the county as well through Go Ahead Ireland. So welcome on board, so to speak, for them. And look forward to covering their games over the next few years.
Excellent stuff. Well, that is good news. And yeah, great to see that the sponsorship is going so strong right across the board. Okay, Declan, as always, wonderful catching up with you. You enjoy all of the games that are on this weekend. There's certainly enough of them, and we should have cracking weather to go along with it. So we'll catch up with you again next week on the GAA.
Please, guys, take care.
Take care. That's Declan Drake there now, giving us all of the GAA news. Yeah, like I said, some cracking games going on. Kerry and Tyrone in Fitzgerald Stadium at 5 o'clock this evening. Donegal are taking on Dublin in Kingspan Breffni Park. And of course, the ladies are taking on Mayo as well. So lots and lots of good GAA to catch up on. We're going to take a quick break now. When we come back, we'll be talking to Alan Cawley about football. So don't go away. And you're very welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport with thanks to insuremyvan.ie. Keep the text messages coming in on 087 11 55 777. Or you can WhatsApp us on 087 188 1068. Delighted to be joined on the line now by Alan Cawley. Morning, Al.
Good morning, Reggie. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing great, thanks. Yeah, we had a few gremlins earlier on, but we've gotten over them now, so we're all back to good form as well. And, you know, there's been no shortage of gremlins around over the past 15, 16 months with everything that's going on. But thankfully, last night saw the return of fans across a wide range of sports. The RDS had 1,200. And indeed, up at the Rovers match against Finn Harps, they had 1,000 people, spectators back as well. Jane, of course, went up to get the reaction of some of those fans and find out what it felt to be like to be back.
Yeah, it was brilliant to be back in the stadium and just really watching it with your own eyes rather than on the TV. It was amazing. It was a great feel. Hopefully now we'll be back sooner rather than later. So yeah, I was delighted. I loved it.
Oh, the atmosphere was fantastic. So much better for the players.
It was great. Really up for it. Like it was 1,000, but you'd think it's packed. Like, you know.
Look, it's a totally different atmosphere. It's very strange, you know. Even seeing the stand full of people, just even seeing a crowd is a bit strange, but the noise, the visible noise levels is something, you know, we're not used to it anymore after, you know, the guts of a year and a half with nothing. So it's delighted to see it back, you know, and bring it on more of it. Like,
brilliant atmosphere. Even as just 1,000 people, it felt a lot more.
To hear the fans singing and all was fantastic, yeah, especially when the team came out at the beginning.
It was really good to get back, because normally it's not as fun on the telly as watching it at the match.
Yeah, it was the same thing, good to get back, and just great to hear the fans sing back together.
Did it feel like a long time?
Very long time.
It sure did feel like a long time, as long as it gets. Alan, just brilliant to hear those voices and hear people happy again.
Yeah, hugely positive reaction from last night, Reggie, and it is. You just listen to the voices there as Jane was up at the match, and it just makes such a difference. We've spoken about it so many times, about the lack of fans and what impact it has on the atmosphere, and there's no comparison whatsoever, Reggie. And you ask any of the players, you ask anyone, they'll all tell you. So it's great that the fans are back. Hopefully it's the start of a sign of things to come. I know there's going to be 100 and 200 and dotted around different grounds in games this evening as well. And funny enough, Reggie, I was leaving. I was working on the match last night, the Women's International, and I was leaving RTE afterwards, and I was heading down by the RDS, and you could see the sense of just pure joy and elation on people who were just walking up to the ground, and that feeling that they were going to a match. There's no better feeling when you're walking up to the ground itself and just sampling the atmosphere and the excitement before the match as well. So, as I say, it seemed to go off really well, hugely positive. And as I say, hopefully it's a sign of things to come and get more people back into the grounds in the coming weeks.
Absolutely. I don't know, though, that they'll be too happy with the result, the Shamrock Rovers fans, because 1-1 against Finn Harps, not the result that would have been expected.
No, I'm just wondering there, as I was listening to them voices, Jane obviously spoke to all those fans before the match, Reggie.
Yeah.
I'd say it was a different answer that we're getting after the match. But that seemed to be the only disappointing thing on Knife Arden was obviously the result. And another stuttering performance and result for Shamrock Rovers. It's probably not what we're used to, obviously, with their brilliant run they're on last year. But they've been very unconvincing this year, Reggie, in a lot of the games, not just last night. And I think they're giving opportunities to the other clubs. Obviously, they would have thought their main rivals was Dundalk, and we all know what's going on up there. And again, a disappointing result for them. So they were never going to mount the title challenge this year, Dundalk, with those issues. But the likes of Sligo Rovers and St. Pat's, who were probably at the start of the season hoping to maybe slightly, I'd say, I wouldn't think they would have been looking to win a league, but they certainly would have been looking to get into Europe. But the fact that Shamrock Rovers are stuttering consistently now over the last 5 or 6 weeks, I think it's given a huge opportunity to the likes of Sligo Rovers and St. Pat's. And if Sligo do win tonight, and obviously Pat's are playing as well, Sligo will push ahead of Shamrock Rovers and Pat's will close the gap. So for us, it's good. It makes for a good title race. But I think from a Shamrock Rovers point of view, I'd say they're getting to the point now where they're probably a little bit concerned just how inconsistent they've been over the last 5 or 6 weeks.
Absolutely. Well, Declan Treg caught up with Stephen Bradley, of course, the Rovers manager. Let's have a listen to that.
First half, best we've been in a long, long time. Could have been a couple of goals up. Second half, we started really, really poor, really sloppy, really slow. Loughrey and Harps into the game, they score, and then they hang on for their lives at the end. We finished the game really well, started the game well, but we can't have that 15-minute period in the second half and allow teams into games and allow them to have something to hang on to.
Sums it up pretty nicely, really. You know, you just can't afford to let teams in and you make a mess of it. And, you know, like you said, they hang on till the end.
Yeah, especially home games against the likes of Finn Harps, because they should be winning those games, Reggie. But Finn Harps have had a good season themselves, and I think the one thing you'll get with Finn Harps is exactly as Stephen Bradley was mentioning there, that if they have something to hold on to, they will hold on to it for dear life, because they're very plucky, resilient, good sense of character about them. And it was a good result for them. But as I say, Shamrock Rovers have been very unconvincing this year. I've watched them in loads of games, even the games where they were winning with late goals, Reggie. They're getting out of jail rather than actually hammering teams, baiting down the door kind of thing, and then scoring late on. It's more a case of just getting out of jail with a lucky goal at the end. So, and it's happened 5 or 6 times now, and then obviously to draw again last night. So I'm sure they're a little bit worried about the form. Stephen Bradley said there the first half was very, very good, but they'll need to bring that in over a period of 90 minutes, because they say it's given opportunities to the Chase and Pack at the moment.
Elsewhere as well, Bowes got a 1-1 draw away to Derry City. They'll be disappointed, even though it's a tough place to go, the Brandywell, to try and get a result. So disappointment mixed in with probably, you know, satisfaction they got something out of it.
I'd say it'd be bitterly disappointed, Reggie, because to concede that in the 92nd minute, and I saw the goal, it was a scrappy goal to concede so late on as well, because Bowes have been on a great run. We mentioned a few weeks back that I didn't think they were far away, and their performances probably weren't reflecting in the results they were getting. But just before the break there, they picked up 2 or 3 wins on the bounce and bumped them right up the table. So for them to be winning again last night and concede, Keith Long will be bitterly disappointed, especially in the manner in which to concede it and so late on as well, Reggie.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, there's no doubt about it. It's a blow to everything they're trying to do. And look, at this stage, the woes of Dundalk have been so well chronicled here on the show. But even at that, you could never see a 3-1 loss at home to Waterford.
No, I couldn't believe the result when I saw it, Reggie. It's not acceptable, really. Like, when they've the highest paid budget we've ever seen in the League of Ireland, and if you're throwing out performances like that, no disrespect to Waterford, but we know the issues they've had this season as well. And that squad or that team have been cobbled together at the last minute at the start of the season, and they've been on a dreadful run down the bottom of the table, Waterford, and for them to go to Oriel Park and win quite convincingly 3-1 as well, Reggie.
Yeah.
We keep mentioning it, the issues going on at Dundalk. It's actually, I don't even know if it's gone past the sad stage now, because how long can it keep going on? You know, it's really, really poor, and to be losing to Waterford. Me and Declan have spoken many times on the show in recent weeks about having no manager in place. That has to impact on the players, Reggie. There's no accountability at the club at the moment from the top down. And that's the major issue that's going on at the moment, because who are the players accountable to? It should be the manager, but there's no manager. The manager should be accountable to the model they have with the director of football. He's down in the dugout. Is he accountable to the owners, or they're in America causing havoc? So it's an absolute shambles at the moment, Reggie.
It is. It's very sad to see it going to that stage. It really is. But somebody needs to put some sense to it all at this stage and kind of sort it all out, because you cannot afford to let a club like that go down to the doldrums that they are and keep going down. Spiraling. It's spiraling.
The only club, Yeah, that's it, Reggie. And the only club I'd say that are happy at the moment that there's no fans in the ground is Dundalk, because believe me, if there was fans in that ground, there'd be no way they'd be getting away with what's going on at the moment.
Mayhem, mayhem. Okay, Pats have what you would consider a handy enough one away to Longford Town. We'll take it that they're going to get victory there, but the tie of the weekend in many ways will be the Sligo-Drogheda game, given what happened with Rovers drawing last night. Sligo sitting there top of the table on 31 points with that game in hand, so they'll be absolutely desperate to get some sort of a result against Drogheda, and being at home, I fancy they might.
Yeah, it should be a cracker, Reggie. You're dead right. It's the tie of the weekend. It's the one that'll interrupt my European the blitz that I'm going to go on today watching all the matches, but that'll certainly interrupt it at 6 o'clock, and I'm looking forward to it. Sligo Rovers and Drogheda. Drogheda have had a brilliant season under Tim Clancy after them getting promoted, and of course Sligo Rovers sitting top of the table, an unbelievable start to the season, and hopefully now they can sustain that and kick on, Reggie, because as I say, before the season they probably would have been the best position they would have been hoped for, I felt, was top three, and that would have been really satisfactory, and look to build on that again. But the position to find themselves in now because of the great start is the fact that they should believe they can go and win the league now, especially when you see the stuttering performances from Shamrock Rovers. And if Sligo win tonight, they obviously went to Shamrock Rovers before the break and beat them as well, so they should have huge confidence, huge belief. If they get the victory tonight, Reggie, that will really set them up for the second half of the season. But you're right, it will be a tough game because Drogheda have been really, really good this year, but it's a game I'm looking forward to, and hopefully you can get the 3 points. But I have a lot of time for what Tim Clancy and Kevin Doherty have done at Drogheda as well, so should be a good game to watch.
Absolutely. Okay, you mentioned the Euros, and no doubt everybody like you and myself will be glued to it. Last night, I was so excited getting ready for the... I was watching it like at 6:30 in the build-up, and my missus is there going, do you actually think you're going to sit here watching build-ups to football as well as the match as well? I'm not watching all of this. So I had to kind of watch bits of it on my phone. But the excitement of this tournament starting, having a real worldwide tournament, you know, the Euros stretch so far around the world for everybody to view, it just feels amazing, you know, to be back at such a big, huge international event. And I enjoyed last night, even though the football from Turkey wasn't great.
Yeah, I agree, Reggie. It's so exciting and it's brilliant. And I think the concept of having the games all around Europe is absolutely brilliant. It's something they should maybe look at again when we do have full stadiums, because the fact that Italy were able to play the opening match in their home stadium and all, it was unbelievable. And there's a great sense of excitement about it. I have to say, when we got to the football, Italy were seriously impressive, Reggie. We all spoke pre-tournament about maybe some of the favourites. I don't think they were marked down as one of the favourites, but they were certainly marked down as a team that could go very well. But after last night's performance, people will have sat up and take note, because I saw an hour of it because I was just on the way home from the previous match. But I was so impressed with them. They were absolutely outstanding. Mancini, as we all know from his Premier League days, but brilliant manager. And just looking at the team last night, they have a brilliant balance. Defensively, they're so strong and so solid. Midfielder, very, very good. Possession-based team as well, which is not something we'd always associate with Italy, but some of the football they played last night was absolutely terrific, Reggie. And as I say, a lot of other countries would have taken note on that performance, and if they have the home crowd behind them in a lot of the games, which I know some of the other countries will have as well, but I think that's a brilliant concept to have for the teams. And it sets the tournament up. I know Turkey were disappointing, but I would look more on the fact that Italy were brilliant rather than Turkey being so poor. I thought they were outstanding last night.
I did too, and I think, if I'm not mistaken, it's the first time they've scored more than 2 goals in the Euros when they got the third. So, like, yeah, it was a very, very strong performance. And I picked out in particular the defence, as you mentioned, and also, you know, when they lost Buffon, you know, having a goalkeeper like Gianluigi Donnarumma, it's rock solid back there, although he had nothing to do last night, but, you know, it's rock solid back there. And with Cellini and that tackle came in at the end, you know, they're fighting for everything. They don't want to concede a goal, and that might have been a little bit of an Achilles heel in the past, that the defence wasn't as good as their attack. They always played beautiful flair attacking football that you love to watch, but defence might have been questionable. Their defence is rock solid, so they are going to be a very, very difficult team for anyone to overcome.
Yeah, we'd have a brilliant balance to the team, Reggie. And the one thing we know about, I suppose, modern-day football, when you look at it, sometimes the argument is made that the art of defending or tackling has gone out of the game. That's certainly not the case in Italy, because that's what they've been brought up on and built on, and that mentality that they have. And as you saw last night from Chiellini's reaction, they're 3-0 up. he makes that tackle and they're celebrating like they scored a goal.
Yeah.
So that's brilliant to see. That's something that they have in their DNA that they've always had. And it bodes well for the tournament because all the great teams, you're built on that solid foundation from the back up. As you mentioned, the goalkeeper is rock solid as well, Donnarumma. In front of them, you obviously have brilliant centre-halves with Chiellini leading the charge as well. And going forward, I thought they were outstanding. The lad on the left, Spinazzola, it's the first time I probably got a real good look at him. Thought he was outstanding, Reggie. Mm. Immobile as well, Insigne. They're really, really good. Jorginho on midfield, as we all know, just keeps things ticking over. So they have a brilliant balance to the team. I love the way they played. The fact that they're at home, I think, helps them. They have that emotional side to their game as well, that we all know the Italians get so motivated about playing for their country, as do everybody, but particularly them. But I thought they were brilliant. I really, really was so impressed with them. And they'll definitely, I think they were 10-1 before the tournament started. They've probably come right in now because they were very, very impressive.
And the passion was so evident. Mm. And that had been lost for a while. And I think, you know, whatever Mancini's done, but he's reinstilled that into the team. You could see it. And that's so crucial. So, yeah, they'll be...
To be fair to him as well, Reggie, he's brought Gianluca Vialli in. So obviously they were a pairing when they played at Sampdoria years ago. And he always had that passion. We know that with all Italians, they have that in them. But certainly you look at them last night and they've instilled, as you say, that into the heart of that team because they were so proud. You even see at the end of the match, they had a little huddle and got together. So they're really, really motivated to go far in this tournament, Reggie.
Everyone's talking about England. What team are they going to pick? What's the starting lineup going to be? It's one of the picks of the weekend for me. Croatia, always such a dogged team in the Euros and with the best jersey arguably in it as well. So the game tomorrow at 2 o'clock for England. I don't envy that one as a starting match.
No, it's a tough game. Croatia obviously beat them in the semi-final of the World Cup. We all know that. And I watched Croatia in a build-up match against Belgium last weekend, Reggie, and they're still every bit as good. Modric obviously midfield pulling strings as well, so it's going to be a tough game, a tough start for England. But I'm looking forward to seeing England as well. There's been a lot of hype and expectation around them. We'll just see can they deliver on that. I think they can, Reggie. It'll be interesting, as you say, the starting lineup he goes with. Will he go for the attacking lineup in terms of going for the match and playing all the youth talent and attacking forwards that they have, or will he be a bit reserved and maybe play two midfield sitting? I think that's what he'll do against Croatia. You may see in the other games he might play with one sitting midfielder against the likes of Scotland and Czech Republic, but certainly tomorrow I think he'll be just hoping to get off to a good start, Southgate. But the worry for them, going back to the point we were making about Italy with how good they are defensively with a steady goalkeeper and two brilliant centre-halves, yeah, that's not the case opposite. For England, Reggie. Yeah. It's the opposite, and that's the worry for them. Obviously,